This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Kathleen J. Don Quixote, Volume 1 by Miguel de Cervantes Saavedra. Translated by John Ormsby. Part 9, Chapter 17, in which are contained the innumerable troubles which the brave Don Quixote and his good squire Sancho Panza endured in the inn, which to his misfortune he took to be a castle. By this time Don Quixote had recovered from his swoon, and in the same tone of voice in which he had called to his squire the day before, when he lay stretched in the Vale of the Styx, he began calling to him now, "Sancho, my friend, art thou asleep? Sleepest thou, friend Sancho?" "How can I sleep? Curses on it," returned Sancho discontently and bitterly, "when it is plain that all the devils have been at me this night." "Thou mayest well believe that," answered Don Quixote, "because either I know little, or this castle is enchanted, for thou must know, but this that I am now about to tell thee, thou must swear to keep secret until after my death." "I swear," answered Sancho. "I say so," continued Don Quixote, "because I hate taking away anyone's good name." "I say," replied Sancho, "that I swear to hold my tongue about it till the end of your worship's days, and God grant I may be able to let it out tomorrow." "Do I do thee such injury, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "that thou wouldst see me dead so soon?" "It is not for that," replied Sancho, "but because I hate keeping things long, and I don't want them to grow rotten with me from overkeeping." "At any rate," said Don Quixote, "I have more confidence in thy affection and good nature, and so I would have thee know that this night there befall me one of the strangest adventures that I could describe, and to relate to it, thou briefly, thou must know that a little while ago the daughter of the lord of this castle came to me, and she is the most elegant and beautiful damsel that could be found in the wide world. What I could tell thee of the charms of her person, her lovely wit, of her secret matters which, to preserve the fealty I owe to my lady Dulcinea del Toboso, I shall pass over unnoticed and in silence. I will only tell thee that either fate being envious of so great a boon placed in my hands by good fortune, or perhaps, and this is more probable, this castle being, as I have already said, enchanted, at the time when I was engaged in the sweetest and most amorous discourse with her, there came, without me seeing or knowing whence it came, a hand attached to some arm of some huge giant that planted such a cuff on my jaws that I have them all bathed in blood, and then pummeled me in such a way that I am worse plight than yesterday when the carriers, on account of Rigonante's misbehavior, inflicted on us the injury thou knowest of, whence conjectured that there must be some enchanted Moor guarding the treasure of this damsel's beauty, and that it is not for me." "Not for me either," said Sancho, "for more than 400 Moors have so thrashed me that the drubbing of the stakes was cakes and fancy bread to it. But tell me, señor, what do you call this excellent and rare adventure that has left us as we are left now, though your worship was not so badly off, having in your arms the incomparable beauty you spoke of? But I, what did I have, except the heaviest wax that I think I had in all my life? Unlucky me and the mother that bore me, for I am not a knight errant and never expect to be one, and all the mishaps the greater part falls to my share." "Then thou hast been slashed too?" said Don Quixote. "Didn't I say so? Worse luck to my line," said Sancho. "Be not distressed, friend," said Don Quixote, "for I will now make the precious balsam which we shall cure ourselves in the twinkling of an eye." By this time the quadrurero had succeeded in lighting the lamp, and came in to see the men that he had thought been killed, and as Sancho caught sight of him at the door, seeing him coming in his shirt with a cloth on his head and a lamp in his hand, and a very forbidding countenance, he said to his master, "Señor, can it be that this the enchanted Moor coming back to give us more castination, if there anything still left in the ink bottle?" "It cannot be the Moor," answered Don Quixote, "for those under enchantment do not let themselves be seen by anyone." "If they do not let themselves be seen, they let themselves be felt," said Sancho. "If not, let my shoulder speak to the point." "Mine should speak too," said Don Quixote, "but that is not a sufficient reason for believing that what we see is the enchanted Moor." The officer came up, and finding them engaged in such a peaceful conversation, stood amazed, though Don Quixote, to be sure, still lay on his back, unable to move from pure pummeling and plasters. The officer turned to him and said, "Well, how goes it, good man?" "I would speak more politely if I were you," replied Don Quixote. "Is it the way of this country to address knight-errants in that style, you booby?" The quadrurero, finding himself so disrespectfully treated by such a sorry-looking individual, lost his temper, and raising the lamp full of oil, smote Don Quixote such a blow with it on the head that he gave him a badly broken pate. Then, all being in darkness, he went out, And Sancho Panza said, "That is certainly the enchanted Moor, señor, and he keeps the treasure for others, and for us only the cusp and lamp wax." "That is the truth," answered Don Quixote, "and there is no use of troubling oneself about these matters of enchantment, or being angry or vexed at them, for as they are as invisible and visionary, we shall find no one on whom to avenge ourselves. Do what we may, rise, Sancho, if thou canst, and call the alcaide of this forest, and get him to give me a little oil, wine, salt, and rosemary to make the sorcerer's balsam. For indeed, I believe that I have great need of it now, because I am losing much blood from the wound that phantom gave me." Sancho got up with pain enough in his bones and went after the innkeeper in the dark, and meeting the officer, who was looking to see what had become of his enemy, he said to him, "Señor, whoever you are, do us the favor and kindness to give us a little rosemary, oil, salt, and wine, for it is wanted to cure one of our best knights errant on earth, who lies on yonder bed, wounded by the hands of the enchanted Moor that is in this inn." When the officer heard him talk in this way, he took him for a man out of his senses, and as day was now beginning to break, he opened the inn gate, and calling the host, he told him what this good man wanted. The host furnished him with what he required, and Sancho brought it to Don Quixote, who, with his hand to his head, was bewailing the pain of the blow of the lamp, which had done him no more than raising a couple of rather large lumps, and what he fancied blood was only the sweat that flowed from him in his sufferings during the late storm. To be brief, he took the materials of which he made a compound, mixing them all and boiling them a good while until it seemed to him they had come to perfection. He then asked for some vial to pour it into, and there was not one in the inn. He decided on putting it into a tin oil bottle or flask, of which the host made him a free gift. And over the flask he repeated more than 80 paternosters, and as many more Ave Marias, Psalms, and Credos, accompanying each word with a cross by the way of benediction, at all which there were present Sancho, the innkeeper, and the cuadrurero, so the carrier was now peacefully engaged in attending to the comfort of his mules. This being accomplished, he felt anxious to make trial himself, on the spot, of the virtue of this precious balsam, and as he considered it, and so he drank near a quart of what could not be put into the flask, and remained in the pigskin in which it had been boiled, but scarcely had he done drinking when he began to vomit in such a way that nothing was left in his stomach. And with the pangs and spasms of vomiting, he broke into a profuse sweat, on account of which he bade them cover him up and leave him alone. They did so, and he lay sleeping more than 3 hours, at the end of which he awoke and felt great bodily relief and so much ease from his bruises that he thought himself quite cured, and verily believed that he had hit upon the balsam of Fierabras, and that with this remedy he might thenceforward, without any fear, face any kind of destruction, battle, or comet, however perilous it might be. Sancho Panza, who also regarded the amendment of his master as miraculous, begged him to give him what was left in the pigskin, which was no small quantity. Don Quixote consented, and he, taking it with both hands, in good faith and with a better will, gulped it down and drained off very little less than his master. But the fact is that the stomach of poor Sancho was of necessity not so delicate as that of his master, and so, before vomiting, he was seized with such gripings and retchings and such sweats and faintness that verily and truly be believed his last hour had come, and finding himself so racked and tormented, he cursed the balsam and the thief that had given it to him. Don Quixote, seeing him in this state, said, "It is my belief, Sancho, that this mischief comes not of thy being dubbed a knight, for I am persuaded this liquor cannot be good for those who are not so." "If your worship knew that," returned Sancho, "woe betide me and all my kindred! Why did you let me taste it?" At this moment the draught took effect, and the poor squire began to discharge both ways at such a rate that the rush mat on which he had thrown himself and the canvas blanket he had covered him were fit for nothing afterwards. He sweated and perspired with such paroxysms and convulsions that not only he himself, but all the present thought his end had come. This tempest and tribulation lasted about 2 hours, at the end of which he was left, not like his master, but so weak and exhausted that he could not stand. Don Quixote, however, was, as has been said, felt himself relieved and well, and was eager to take his departure at once in quest of adventures, as it seemed to him that all the time he loitered there was a fraud upon the world and those in it who stood in need of its help and protection, all the more when he had the security and confidence in balsam afforded him. And so, urged by this impulse, he saddled Ricinante himself and put the pack saddle on his squire's breast, whom likewise he helped to dress and mount the ass, after which he mounted his horse, and turning to a corner of the inn, he laid hold of a pike that stood there, to serve him by way of a lance. All that were in the inn, who were more than 20 persons, stood watching him. The innkeeper's daughter was likewise observing him, and he too never took his eyes off her, and from time to time fetched a sigh that he seemed to pluck up from the depths of his bowels, but they all thought it must be from the pain he felt in his ribs, and at any rate they who had seen him plastered the night before thought so.
As soon as they both mounted at the gate of the inn, he called to the host and said in a very grave and measured voice, "Many and great are the favors, Señor Alcaide, and that I have received in this castle of yours, and I remain under the deepest obligation to be grateful to you for them all the days of my life. If I can repay them in avenging you of any arrogant foe who may have wronged you, know that my calling is no other than to aid the weak, to avenge those who suffer wrong, and to chastise perfidy. Search your memory, and if you find anything of this kind, you need only tell me of it, and I promise you by the order of knighthood which I have received to procure you satisfaction and reparation to the utmost of your desire." The innkeeper brought to him with equal calmness, "Sir Knight, I do not want your worship to avenge me of any wrong, because when any is done me, I can take what vengeance seems good to me. The only thing I want is that you pay me the score that you have run up in the inn last night, as well for the straw and barley of your two beasts as for supper and beds."
"Then this is an inn?" said Don Quixote.
"And a very respectable one," said the innkeeper. "I have been under a mistake all this time," answered Don Quixote, "for in truth I thought this was a castle, and not a bad one. But since it appears that it is not a castle, but an inn, all that can be done now is that you should excuse the payment, for I cannot contravene the rules of knight-errant, of whom I know as a fact, and up to the present I have read nothing to the contrary, that they never paid for lodging or anything else in the inn where they might be, for any hospitality that might be offered them is their due by law, and right in return for the insufferable toil they endure in seeking adventures by night and by day, in summer and in winter, on foot and on horseback, in hunger and thirst, cold and heat, exposed to all the inclemencies of heaven and the hardships of earth."
"I have little to do with that," replied the innkeeper. "Pay me what you owe me, and let us have no more talk of chivalry, for all I care about is to get my money."
"You are a stupid, scurvy innkeeper," said Don Quixote, and putting spurs to Ricinante and bringing his pike to the slope, he rode out of the inn before anyone could stop him, and pushed on some distance without looking to see if his squire was following him. The innkeeper, when he saw him go without paying him, ran to get payment of Sancho, who said that as his master would not pay, neither would he. Because, being as he was squire to a knight-errant, the same rule and reason held good for him as for his master with regard to not paying anything in inns and hostelries. And at this, the innkeeper waxed very wroth and threatened, if he did not pay, to compel him in a way that he would not like, to which Sancho made answer that by the law of chivalry his master had received, he would not pay a rap, though it cost him his life, for the excellent and ancient usage of knight-errants was not going to be violated by him, nor should the squires of such as were yet to come into the world ever complain of him or reproach him without breaking so just a privilege. The ill luck of the unfortunate Sancho so ordered that among the company in the inn there were 4 wool carders from Segovia, 3 needle-makers from the cult of Cordoba, and 2 lodgers from the fair Seville, lively fellows, tender-hearted, fond of a joke, and playful, who, almost as if instigated and moved by a common impulse, made up to Sancho and dismounted him from his ass, while one of them went in for the blanket of the host's bed. But on flinging him into, they looked up, and seeing that the ceiling was somewhat lower than what they required for their work, they decided upon going out into the yard, which was bounded by the sky. And there, putting Sancho in the middle of the blanket, they began to raise him high, making sport with him as they would with a dog at the stroke time. The cries of the poor blanketed wretch were so loud that they reached the ears of his master, who, halting to listen attentively, was persuaded that some new adventure was coming, until he clearly perceived that it was the squire who uttered them. Wheeling about, he came up to the inn with a laborious gallop, and finding it shut, went round to see if he could find some way of getting in. But as soon as he came to the wall of the yard, which was not very high, he discovered the game that was being played with his squire. He saw him rising and falling in the air with such grace and nimbleness that, had his rage allowed him, it is my belief he would have laughed. He tried to climb from his horse onto the top of the wall, but he was so bruised and battered that he could not even dismount. And so, from the back of his horse, he began to utter such maledictions and objurgations against those who were blanketing Sancho as it would be impossible to write down accurately. They, however, did not stay their laughter or their work for this, nor did the flying Sancho cease his lamentations, mingled now with threats, now the entreaties, but all to little purpose, or none at all, until from pure weariness they left off. They then brought him his ass, and mounting him on top of it, they put his jacket round him, and the compassionate Maritornes, seeing him so exhausted, thought fit to refresh him with a jug of water, and that it might be all the cooler she fetched from the well. Sancho took it, and as he was raising it to his mouth, he was stopped by the cries of his master, exclaiming, "Sancho, my son, drink not water, drink it not, my son, for it will kill thee. See, here I have the blessed balsam," and he held up the flask of liquor, "and with drinking 2 drops of it thou wilt certainly be restored." At these words, Sancho turned his eyes asquint, and in a still louder voice said, "Can it be your worship has forgotten that I am not a knight, or do you want me to end up by vomiting what bowels I have left after last night? Keep your liquor in the name of all the devils, and leave me to myself." And at one and the same instant he left off talking and began drinking. But as the first sup he proceeded with water, he did not care to go on with it, and begged Maritornes to fetch him some wine, which he did with a right good will, and paid for with her own money. For indeed, they say of her that, though she was in that line of life, there was some faint and distant resemblance to a Christian about her. When Sancho had done drinking, he dug his heels into his ass, and the gate of the inn being thrown open, he passed out very well pleased at having paid nothing, and carried his point, though it had been at the expense of his usual sureties, his shoulders. It is true that the innkeeper detained his alforges in payment of what was owing to him, but Sancho took his departure in such a flurry that he never missed him. The innkeeper, as soon as he saw him off, wanted to bar the gate closed, but the blanketers would not agree to it, for they were fellows who would not have cared 2 farthings for Don Quixote, even had he been really one of the knight-errants of the Round Table. End of part 9,
chapter 17.